fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young. Let's kick off the Sunny Side of Sports here in Washington. That's where Gianni Infantino, the president of World Football's governing body, FIFA, has met with U.S. President Donald Trump.
Well, thank you very much. We very much appreciate the fact that we have won a very important event, the World Cup in 2026, and we'll be hosting it along with Mexico and Canada. And it's a very special event. I think it's probably certainly one of the biggest and maybe the biggest sporting event in the world. And soccer's come such a long way. Soccer is a game, I guess you call it football.
Yeah.
But over here, maybe at some point they'll change the name. I'm not sure.
Let's see.
But we'll see.
We can negotiate that.
It's working. It's working very well either way. But I just want to thank Gianni Infantino for being here. He's the president of FIFA and a highly respected man. In fact, when my son heard he was going to be here, he said, "Dad, I'd like to meet him." So you're pretty famous, right?
Yeah.
Pretty important and
looks
pretty
like.
Famous. He likes, my son Baron loves soccer. And soccer has to be one of the fastest growing sports in the world. And the job you've done is really fantastic, Gianni.
President Trump also praised U.S. Soccer Federation President Carlos Cordero for his efforts in helping bring the 2026 World Cup to the United States. Cordero and Infantino spent about an hour with Trump, presenting him and family members with jerseys and, for the president, a set of yellow and red cards. FIFA President Gianni Infantino.
One more thing that could be useful for you. You know, in soccer we have referees,
right?
And they have cards.
Ooh.
Yellow cards and red cards.
Yeah.
Yellow card is a warning.
Right.
And when you want to kick out someone...
like this.
On a more serious note, Infantino said he believes the 2026 World Cup in North America could prove to be even more successful than the recent World Cup in Russia.
Thanks, President, for welcoming us here. It's a great honor to be here, and thanks for everything you are doing to support our sport as well. Obviously, 2026, the World Cup, the biggest event, sporting event for sure, but probably even social event in the world. We just had the World Cup in Russia, more than 4 billion viewers. The final only over 1 billion viewers. It's massive, it's huge. So in Russia, President, we said that we would organize the best World Cup ever,
right?
And we did organize the best World Cup ever.
Right.
In the US, together with Canada and Mexico, we want to organize the greatest World Cup ever, if you agree.
Well,
and for this, we will work together and do whatever we can to make sure that this will be a fantastic event. But I'm looking very, very much forward, and the world is looking very much forward to that.
The 2026 World Cup will be the first with 48 teams. This year's World Cup in Russia featured 32 teams. 60 of the World Cup's 80 matches in 2026 are scheduled to be held here in the United States, with Mexico and Canada staging 10 apiece. U.S. Soccer Federation President Carlos Cordero also spoke at the White House ceremony.
Well, Mr. President, thank you for hosting us today. For my part, for my federation, the U.S. Soccer Federation, for the United Bid, representing U.S., Canada, and Mexico, we are really very honored, deeply honored to be hosting this event in 2026. It's right around the corner. We have a lot of work to do, but we look forward to working with you and your administration. Let me also thank you, Mr. President, for your help, support throughout the campaign, your written assurances and warranties. I think without that, we wouldn't have won quite such a convincing victory. So thank you very much for that.
U.S. Soccer Federation President Carlos Cordero mentioned the convincing victory by the USA, Canada, and Mexico in winning the 2026 World Cup hosting rights. On June 13th in Moscow, the day before this year's World Cup kicked off, the United North America bid easily beat Morocco 134-65. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African football news, South Africa's head coach, Stuart Baxter, has named a 22-man team for a 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualifying match against visiting Libya on September 8th. The game will be played in South Africa's eastern coastal city of Durban, which also staged matches during the 2010 World Cup. Coach Baxter is warning his team not to underestimate the Libyans, who at 101 are 27 places lower than South Africa in the August FIFA World Rankings. Baxter points out how Iceland, which made its first World Cup appearance this year in Russia, was, in his words, a total no-hoper 4 or 5 years ago. And Coach Baxter says in Africa, there are constant surprises from teams that only 5 or 6 years ago would have been whipping boys. Baxter adds that Libya has a well-organized team that will present a real challenge in Durban. Now, the South Africans got off to a good start more than a year ago in their quest to qualify for next year's Nations Cup in Cameroon. They traveled to Nigeria and beat the host Super Eagles 2-0. Libya also got off to a good start, trouncing the Seychelles 5-1. So this game in Durban will be a matchup of group leaders. I mentioned the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. Well, that plastic horn, the vuvuzela, definitely made some noise during the tournament. Here's a vuvuzela song celebrating Bafana Bafana, South Africa's national football team. It's called Abafana. That's Abafana, a vuvuzela song celebrating South Africa's national football team. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Well, you might say the tennis and the weather are heating up at the U.S. Open tournament in New York. Joining us once again is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. There were no major upsets in the second day of tennis action, despite energy-sapping heat and humidity. The extreme weather has caused at least two players to retire from their first-round matches, and the rising temperatures have led the U.S. Tennis Association to announce that the men's tournament will now benefit from a 10-minute heat break, previously granted only to women players before their third set. The new rule will be reviewed on a day-to-day basis, but it was in full effect when play was stopped during Novak Djokovic's match against Hungary's Martin Fucsovics. After the match, Djoko talked about the newly implemented break.
The time to use this kind of opportunity and try to get back in the match. You know, after that, I haven't lost the game till the end of the match. Obviously, a 10-minute break was something that was very much appreciated and needed, and I'm glad that we had that. Obviously, haven't experienced that before. It was the first time. I think we both needed it.
And he described what it's like to play in such sweltering conditions.
It was so warm. Everything, it feels like everything is boiling in your body. You know, the brains and you know everything is like the temperature is so high. So you want to try to counter that a little bit so you can refresh yourself.
Well, Djokovic certainly used that new break rule to his advantage. He went on to win the next two sets, closing the match with a 6-0 win in the fourth, which came as a surprise to Djokovic.
I did not think I would not finish it, but I was obviously, you know, hoping and praying that I'll get to feel better as the match progresses. And obviously, I felt better, especially after that 10-minute break. For the first three sets, it was a survival mode for, you know, for both of us.
Well, the searing heat didn't affect Roger Federer in his opening match. Federer kept his court time to just under 2 hours and breezed past Japan's Yoshihiro Nishioka to win in straight sets. After the match, Federer said he felt calm walking into Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Thankfully, I wasn't too nervous tonight. You know, I felt good. I felt like I had a good preparation week. No hiccups there. And I think that settles my nerves there. But you do walk out onto Arthur Ashe and you feel like, you know, people are there to see the show and enjoy themselves. Sure, they come for the tennis, but it's also sort of bucket list, you know, wanting to be there.
Federer is going for his sixth U.S. Open title, and he says despite the pressure to win, it's good to be back in New York.
There's pressure, but no, it never gets old. I love coming to play here, and it's been so many years now. So it's great to have played also a good first round against an entertaining first round opponent. So I'm very pleased to be back in New York, of course.
Also on the men's side, it only took Germany's Alexander Zverev 95 minutes to advance to the second round with the help of 25 aces. He won in straight sets against Canadian Peter Plansky. And Australian Nick Kyrgios had a lethargic start but went on to defeat Radu Albert of Moldova. With only four career titles at the ATP Tour, Kyrgios is vying to make the U.S. Open his first Grand Slam triumph. But his journey there has not been without controversy. The 23-year-old is known for showboating on the court, and Tuesday he was heard shouting an expletive-laden rant about the heat and how he could no longer play. Kyrgios later said his on-court antics keep him relaxed, but his attitude at the tournament is being questioned by fans, pundits, and players like Roger Federer. Federer said while it's good to have fun, Kyrgios takes things to the extreme. He went on to say it's time for Kyrgios to slow down and realize his potential. Well, things should get interesting in the days to come. Federer and Kyrgios are on course to face each other in the third round. Moving to the women's side, former world number one Caroline Wozniacki of Denmark cruised past Australian Samantha Stosur, winning in straight sets to reach the second round. Fourth seed Angelique Kerber of Germany has clearly shaken off the ghost of U.S. Open past. She suffered a disappointing first-round loss last year, but on Tuesday, she defeated Russian Margarita Gasparyan in straight sets to advance to the next round. And five times Grand Slam champion Maria Sharapova Sharapova of Russia overcame a shaky start to defeat Patty Schneider of Switzerland in straight sets. Well, along with the players, the U.S. Open officials are also feeling the heat. After French tennis player Alizé Cornet was hit with a code violation during her match against Sweden's Johanna Larsson, the incident was captured on video. Cornet had just returned to the court following a 10-minute heat break when she realized she put her shirt on backwards. She turned away from the cameras and turned her shirt around the correct way, briefly exposing the back of her sports bra. However, the chair umpire deemed Cornet's action as inappropriate and punished her with the violation. According to the WTA rulebook, female players are not allowed to change attire on the court. Male players, however, are permitted to do so. Backlash against what is being called a double standard has been swift on social media. Twitter users have called the rule ridiculous and sexist. One follower wrote, "Busted for code violation. Alizé Cornet took 10 seconds to turn her top the right way, but Novak Djokovic can sit for minutes half naked. Same competition." Cornet was visibly stunned by the code violation and went on to lose her match in three sets. Cornet later described the weather conditions during her match as a nightmare. The weather forecast is calling for high heat and humidity again on Wednesday, and I sure hope things cool down in the days that follow. I'll have more results from the U.S. Open tomorrow. Sunny, back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. And Gwen, keeping with that heat theme, I must say that was a hot, red hot U.S. Open tennis report. Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In women's professional basketball, the Atlanta Dream and the top-seeded Seattle Storm posted victories at home Tuesday night in the WNBA semifinals. In Atlanta, Georgia, the Dream defeated the Washington Mystics 78-75 to even the best-of-five-game series at 1-1. Reserve guard Alex Bentley had a team-high 22 points for Atlanta. Washington star Elena Delladon had game-high totals of 27 points and 14 rebounds, but her status for Game 3 on Friday night here in Washington is uncertain. With just more than 3 minutes to play in Game 2 and the score tied at 70, Delladon crumpled to the floor with a knee injury and left the game. Elena Delladon was named the WNBA's most valuable player in 2015. Meanwhile, Breonna Stewart, who was named the WNBA's MVP for 2018, scored 27 points to help lead the Seattle Storm to a 91-87 overtime victory against the Phoenix Mercury. Seattle now leads that semifinal series 2-0. Game 3 will be Friday night in the western U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona. Still with professional basketball, the Milwaukee Bucks selected guard Dante DiVincenzo with the 17th overall pick in the 2018 NBA draft. I'm sure the Bucks saw what Dante did in this year's U.S. Men's College Basketball Final. DiVincenzo had a great shooting night to help lead Villanova University to its second national title in 3 years. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2018, my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson looks back on the U.S. College Basketball Final, and he begins with Dante DiVincenzo.
Honestly, no. I did not think that I was going to have this kind of night. The U.S. College Basketball National Championship came down to the spectacular play of Villanova sophomore guard Dante DiVincenzo. His 31 points against Michigan were the most by a sixth man off the bench in a national title game, while also shooting better than 66% from the floor in a Final Four game.
If we get off to a good start, I try to take that energy to a new level. I try to defend, and I try to rebound to best my ability and just trying to get it going. And like I said, these guys did a great job of just finding me, and I found myself in the rhythm.
Michigan took a solid lead early in San Antonio, Texas. Villanova coach Jay Wright says he was outsmarted by the opposing coach.
You know, John Beilein is one of the best coaches of all time. They got early. We weren't prepared for some of the things they were doing. They jumped on us, and I should have known better with John. And then we kind of got settled in after that and got did a good job defensively.
But midway through the first half, Jay Wright called on his tall redhead nicknamed Big Ragu, who began hitting three-point shots seemingly at will, a force Michigan coach John Beilein had no answer for.
We needed to play better, but even if we had played our best, it would have been very difficult to win that game with what DiVincenzo did. It was an incredible performance. So sometimes those individual performances just beat you, and you just say, okay, you take off your hat and say, good game. We played you the best we could, and tonight you were better than us.
DiVincenzo had a huge 10-for-15 shooting night, 5-for-7 from three-point range, making him an easy winner for most outstanding player in the Final Four. Beilein said that he could find little to exploit in Villanova's lineup.
I mean, we were trying to find, well, who's the weak guy we can pick on? And there's a couple guys that aren't as strong as others, but it is a tremendous basketball team. That team right there could play it could win a lot of Final Fours, not just the 2018 one.
Villanova's 79-62 romp over Michigan was another blowout tournament victory, as they won all six games by double digits, joining the 2000 Michigan State team, Duke from 2001, and North Carolina's 2009 team in that rare air. Beilein and Wright politely disagreed on what Villanova accomplished.
When I looked at their scores in the NCAA tournament, there were not even any close ones. They were dominating everyone.
We don't look at it that way, you know, like that, oh, we just dominated that team. We just look at, okay, we played well, we played good 40 minutes, where do we need to get better? And I don't think these kids will even think that we dominated the tournament. They'll just think we played Villanova basketball, we got better the next night, we got better. We did keep getting better. We got better from the Kansas game. We got better defensively tonight. So that's what they take great pride in.
Villanova has won three national championship titles in men's Division I basketball, with two in the last 3 years. There is one thing that has been different for each game. Coach Jay Wright's suit.
There's a website or something, Jay Wright's suits, and they critique it. So I really don't spend as much time on it as people think, but I know if I would wear the same suit, they would say it, so I make sure I don't.
Well, this suit is now a champion suit.
And thanks to my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson, for that report. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. More football news now on the VOA. Action resumes Saturday in the English Premier League. Taking a look at the top of the table, Liverpool, Tottenham Hotspur, Chelsea, and surprising Watford all have the maximum 9 points from three matches. It's only the fourth time in Watford's 137-year history that the team has won its first three games of a league season, and the first time ever in the Premier League. Watford will be at home Sunday against Tottenham, which humiliated Manchester United on Monday 3-0 to stay perfect after three rounds. Harry Kane, the leading scorer at this year's World Cup in Russia, had one of the goals for the Spurs. I encourage our VOA listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up the August 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to our VOA engineer, the pride of Sierra Leone, Sule Terawali. Yes, he is the pride of Sierra Leone. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
New data was released at the July 2018 International AIDS Conference demonstrating the HIV epidemic is coming under control in Namibia. Results from the Namibia Population-Based HIV Impact Assessment show that 77% of all HIV-positive adults have achieved viral load suppression, a widely used measure of effective HIV treatment in a population. This surpasses the UN's target of 73% by 2020. Compared with the UNAIDS 2012 estimates, Namibia has reduced its adult HIV incidence rate by 50% in the past 5 years. Namibia has made this tremendous progress through the expansion of HIV prevention and treatment services, with a focus on viral load suppression at the individual and community level, and the swift implementation of forward-leading HIV policies. Women ages 15 to 24 still have a far higher HIV incidence rate than same-aged young men in Namibia. This highlights the continued need for expanded primary HIV prevention in young women and ensuring all HIV-infected men, particularly those ages 25 to 35, receive life-saving treatment and are virally suppressed. These exciting new data demonstrate that a community-centered approach results in high community viral suppression, which decreases the rates of new HIV infections, said Ambassador Deborah Birx, U.S. Global AIDS Coordinator and Special Representative for Global Health Diplomacy. She said several African countries are now on track to reach HIV epidemic control by 2020, accelerated progress that was only possible because of partner country political leadership and their rapid adoption of policies focusing primary prevention and treatment resources for maximum impact. Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield said CDC continues to support Namibia's efforts to control its HIV epidemic, and we remain committed to global efforts to change the course of the HIV pandemic and help save lives. The population-based HIV impact assessments are funded by the U.S. government through PEPFAR and conducted by the CDC, ICAP at Columbia University, and local governmental and non-governmental partners. With PEPFAR support, 4 additional countries, Ethiopia, Haiti, Kenya, and Rwanda, will release HIV data on a rolling basis throughout 2019, providing an ability to chart and validate further progress toward reaching epidemic control by 2020. Together, said Dr. Birx, we are making the impossible possible, moving farther and faster toward ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, pressure mounts on Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni over the beating and detention of music star Bobi Wine. And we'll discuss the legacy of Kofi Annan on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.